be.
Yeah, there it is. When that robot voice pops in, you know it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we are so glad you have chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're recovering from Superb Owl Weekend. Maybe you're just trying to clean up the mess of all the wings and wing sauce. Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring the show to you. Their generosity, their support, their belief in us makes this show possible, and we are so grateful. In exchange, our patrons get some cool stuff, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand. Although this week, Discord was not cooperating, so it's not happening. And tons of bonus content. We got spoiler casts. We got an entire season of a show called Feeling This, where Alex Solman and Christian Spicer talk about the feelings behind video games. Second season already being recorded, already on the way. Plus, you get, at the Cool Ranch tier, you get a new show every single Wednesday. This Wednesday, it's called Paid DLC, by the way. It is usually myself, Christian Spicer, and Lana Bashinsky joining us every single Wednesday. But this week was even more special because we had a fourth guest on. Danish Syed was there. He told us a goose story. It was amazing. And he also detailed the efforts he made in recreating the Grail Diary from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. You cannot miss this content. And it could all be yours by supporting the show at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games in their many forms, including games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who offers a hearty congratulations to the fans of either Philadelphia or Kansas City. We don't know yet. We're recording early. It's Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Yeah, buddy. What a game. Woo. Wow. I could not win that one moment. Incredible.
Oh, unexpected, that thing that happened.
Unexpected.
And speaking of unexpected. Show? Wow.
Rihanna.
Yes.
If Tom Holland, when Tom Holland made that guest appearance during Umbrella, it brought me back to lip sync battles and I was in euphoric bliss. Real quick up top, I finally got extra copies of my graphic novel Consequences that successfully launched on Kickstarter just to sell regularly. And so I have those up on my site, christianspicer.com/store. There's a limited amount. You can head over there, buy one. I will ship it right to you. They are available right now as long as I have stock on hand. But I thought that was exciting that I got extra copies to sell out to folks.
My understanding is that you're offering a special buy one, get one offer.
Yes, exactly. It is a...
You buy one, you get that one.
It's a BOGO. Buy one, get one.
That's the one you get. That's the one you bought.
I mean, sometimes you buy one and you get another one because I put one. I mean, they're all the same, but like I have the
accident.
One.
And that's then buy I put one, the accidentally one. Get one.
But they're all the same, but it might not be like the one, but it's the other one. But it's still
you
a got good
the
one.
Other one. Yeah. You bought one and you picked up one from a different pile and you got that one.
And you got that one, which is probably the best one.
Buy one, maybe get a different one.
Buy one. It's a buy one. It's a buy one is what it is. I'm offering a buy one sale. Yeah. I'm offering a buy one sale at christianspicer.com/store where you can buy one.
He knows what to do. Hey, like I said, we're recording a little bit early this week to make room for us to go watch The Superb Owl. And we're a little early. But we got a ton of stuff to talk about. It was Steam Next Fest week, which means I've played about a bazillion D games. And we got big news. It was a Nintendo Direct. Oh, we're going to get into all of it. And we have an awesome guest to do that with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But once again this week, I am so excited because DLC stands for driving lots of content, because we have God tier streamer, friend of the show, and Kansas City Chief fan.
That's
Tim
right.
Trixler Frazier's back with us. What's up, Trixler?
What's up, Jeff? What's up, Spice Man? How are you guys? It's been forever since I've been here, but I always lurk in the shadows watching you guys doing your thing. I support and love everything that you guys do, especially with this show. I love that you guys bring on Lana all the time. She's one of my favorite friends to get food with. And so I'm excited to talk about, one, the Super Owl, as you keep calling it, and video games. I mean, Nintendo lately, I've become a bit of a fanboy with that, so I'm kind of excited to dive into some of their stuff and get your guys' thoughts.
Yeah,
and it's going to be some other owls, too, apparently.
Ooh. Yeah, there's all kinds of owls in this episode. Tim.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're talking to you now, because in 1 day from now.
Oh, boy.
You may not be as happy, or you may be so happy that you wouldn't even have time to talk to us because you'd be partying. How do you feel about, on this eve of the big game, how do you feel about your Kansas City Chiefs chances?
I'm excited. Injury report came in yesterday. Everyone's looking nice and healthy, which was a bit of an issue for us the last couple of weeks, especially with like Mahomes and his ankle, et cetera. So I've been kind of keeping an eye on that.
All the wide receivers.
Dude, all the quarterbacks, man, lately, also just getting injured. You are no shy person of that, right? With the 49ers.
Unfortunately.
But I'm actually like kind of okay with whoever wins this weekend. I know it's kind of weird to like be a fan of one team, but one, the Kelsey Bros, they do a podcast and they're really excited to watch, so I'll be happy for either of them. But also because the Chiefs got over their hump, they beat the Bengals last weekend, which has been a rivalry. It's been growing like crazy, and I actually had so much stress. I've never had stress about football or like external sports for that week. I couldn't sleep. It was the weirdest thing. And so them getting the win against the Super Bowl is huge for me. I'm happy either way. I just hope it's a good game, really.
Yes, so I hope so too.
You're not going to go on Twitter and make a bold prediction about a quarterback proving all their doubters wrong.
Oh my gosh.
Wait. And then that quarterback in the sixth play of the game hurts their elbow. And
so, well, does Jeff Kurtz
make another prediction that the backup quarterback is going to come in and make a prove all the doubters?
You guys should really use this power that you guys have in the DLC podcast and now sports for good, because I think you could really take you anywhere in the world if you want to
destroy things by predicting them. Yeah.
Tricks we can't. All we can do is occasionally get 50% of video game predictions right. And even
a high number, by the way,
definition as far as we can.
Our don't sell it short. It's
only
good.
We only manifest bad things. It's a monkey paw situation. Anyhow. let's jump in and start the show the way we always do, the story of the week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments or questions or really anything you'd like us to know. We love hearing from you. dlcfeedback@gmail.com. And also, why not hang out with our communities? Two places you can do that. One is our subreddit, which is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. The other is our Discord, which is also 5x5dlc on Discord. Great folks hanging out, talking games and all sorts of other stuff. Give it a shot. Check it out. Hang out. Be one of them. But Trixler, you are our guest. So you've got first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I thought the Nintendo Direct coming out this week came out with some pretty big hitters. You know, I know there's some games that people are waiting out for, but I think that's like the curse of Nintendo succeeding. Is they just have so many IPs that so many people want to play. But for me, it was actually, if we go to a sub-story of that big story, was Kirby and the Forgotten Land DLC. I don't know if you guys played this game last year.
Well, Christian raved about it, and I still haven't made time for it. Yeah.
It's incredible. It's such a great game. The presentation is wonderful. There's some like moments where you can tell the Nintendo Switch is kind of aging a bit when it like pans out and there's FPS issues. But still, beautiful game. The combat is clean. I've never been like a massive Kirby fan until I've played this game. And now with them talking about DLC coming, I'm pumped for more Kirby. And I hope they go hard in this IP. I really do.
Yeah, Kirby, I love the Kirby franchise in that every game seems to be wildly different than the previous one. And I like, I love that. I love the experimentation that they do with Kirby. And I've had some real, you know, Canvas Curse is still one of my favorite all-time DS games. And, you know, I really got to make time for that game. But that's really cool that you've become such a fan of the Kirby franchise and seeing the DLC. Also a great pull from this Nintendo Direct, because this was jam-packed with stuff. I mean, we've seen Nintendo do these Directs that are very focused, like it's just the Pokemon Direct, or it's just the Super Smash Brothers Direct, or whatever it is. They'll, do a hyper-focused one or two games. This was not that. This was drinking from the fire hose. This was tons of stuff over almost an hour-long Direct. And as you said, it did have some heavy hitters. It did have some stuff that people have been anticipating for quite a while. You know, we've all predicted and heard rumors about a Metroid Prime remaster.
Yeah.
Not only was that announced, but it was dropped same day. That's pretty cool.
Can I say, like, I love that that's happening more, and I want it to happen more. I've become a little bit jaded and cynical lately when it comes to, like, releasing games and announcing games, and then they come out a year later, and then they announce a couple delays. I'm like, okay, maybe this is becoming more of, like, a marketing tactic more than, like, authentically trying to make sure devs have time. And I prefer just games being dropped on us, like Metroid Prime, Hi-Fi, Rush lately. I want to see more of this, and yeah. It's great that they did that.
I agree with you. I think it's a very fun feeling when that happens, especially with something like Hi-Fi Rush, where you're like, I didn't even know this existed.
Yeah.
With Metroid Prime Remastered, it's more baffling to me in that everybody has been clamoring for information about this, and it seems like they could have very easily said, hey, this is coming.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It does feel cool when it's like the first time they officially confirm it is the same day that you can play it. That is cool. And we'll get more into Metroid Prime Remastered in the playlist, because I know Christian's been putting some time into it.
Good. I want to hear about it.
We also got a new trailer for Tears of the Kingdom, the new Zelda game, confirmation of its price point, $70. I'm curious what your thoughts about that are, Trixler. May 12th, $70.
I'm kind of in the middle on this, because I like to try to look at like both ends of the spectrums when it comes to arguments. And on one hand, you want to be consumer friendly and make sure people can purchase their games. On the other hand, like, games are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. There's more people on these games. And with companies like Nintendo that give you big, massive single player experiences, I don't mind a price hike, especially if the game is worth it. And we know Breath of the Wild was incredible for a lot of people, and they were super into it. And if they feel like this is a worthy successor, the increase, while expensive, I'm kind of all right with. If that's what you were alluding to with your point, is do I hate this price increase? I'm kind of in the middle. I kind of get it. I see both sides, and I just kind of feel like with the world as it is, we keep having prices increase everywhere, right? So it's going to happen in gaming too.
Yeah, you know, it's never, you never go, oh, I'm super happy about spending more money. You know, it's always a hard pill to swallow. And Christian, I know you and I were kind of texting about this a little bit. We were told that the new generation of games were going to be standard $70, and we've seen some of that. It feels like that's an easier demarcation line to say, hey, we got a new console generation. Now is the time. But, you know, obviously Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom is coming out on the same old generation it's been on for, what are we in, like 5 or 6 years now. So it seems weird. Obviously, this game is huge. They could charge whatever they want for it, and people would still pay it. But Christian, what do you make of the $70 for Zelda?
Yeah, the last time we did a price increase, it was also generational, right? From the standard $49.99 to then $59.99 and now $69.99 in the US. And I do think that generational leap is easier to swallow. However it's justified. Oh, HD textures. We've moved to HD now, or our games are way larger than they used to be, and this, that, and the other. And Nintendo has also come out and said that this new price point isn't standard for their first-party games. Like, this is a one-off thing. And I think this news kind of coming around the same time that AMC Theaters has announced variable pricing for movie theater seats, too, where it's like, better seats are more expensive. Worse seats, while still good, they say. Like, the bad seats, I mean, the less good, still good seats are cheaper. We've certainly seen variable pricing in a lot of things.
Wait, is that real?
It is real. Yeah.
They're rolling out in a few select cities right now, but
I fight? That makes me angry.
Well, they've walked that back too. Originally it was like, we're doing this everywhere, and people were like, what? And they were like, by everywhere we mean four cities and maybe not. You see that at concerts or sporting
stadiums
events
and stuff. Yeah, but that's 40,000 versus 200. Okay, anyway,
and it's also
I'm also just trying to set the stage. I agree.
It's also a terrible experience buying tickets to a concert. It's a terrible experience. Right. Yeah. No one likes that. It's like, hey, let's be more like Ticketmaster because everyone loves Ticketmaster.
No, thank you. Or an airplane where it's like, my family of four. Well, two of my kids are, I think it was in the State of the Union where Biden said that airlines treat kids as luggage, which I think is very funny, wherever that quote came from. Because it's like, sometimes you'll buy a ticket for a flight and it's like, well, these are the cheap ones. I guess we aren't sitting together. Then you get there and it's like, I have a 5-year-old. Am I going to sit with them? And they're like, no. And I'm like, oh, okay. Sorry, random person.
I wish they would treat my kids as luggage so I could check them at the
end. Can I get here? No, then you just, have to bring them. When they're luggage or cargo, you have to bring them across a dangerous country. So that's a different experience.
Everything to declare? Children.
So to some extent, yes, this bothers me, and it bothers me on all levels, right? It kind of rubs me the wrong way that it's a mid-gen or, you know, current, still same-gen price increase. And it also kind of bothers me of Nintendo kind of saying, like, no, we think people will pay this for this, which, like, I get. That's how capitalism works, but it doesn't make me feel good. It doesn't make me feel good to you know, have them say, because this is popular – we're going to charge more for it just because we can. Like, and again, I'm not a business, but as a consumer of stuff that isn't a good feeling. And movies did that with, I think it was the Batman. Theaters charged more for than, like, you know, the other random movies that were in theaters that week. And I don't know. I just never feel good. It never feels good to kind of cross shop things like that and see that variability in the pricing. I don't know. I'm not a fan, but the problem is it's a Nintendo game, so it will never go on sales.
Yeah, that's the other part. Do not bring their prices down in any way, shape, or form, and it's frustrating trying to buy Super Mario 64 and it's still like $50.
It is. Yeah. 4 years after the, you know, I'm just buying you know, Smash Brothers for my kid, and I'm like, can't give me a discount, dude.
Which I guess a testament to price it more. I mean, they clearly know what they're doing, and I'm not saying it's wrong, but it doesn't feel good.
Well, to Trixler's point, it is the one thing you can rest assured of with the Zelda game is there's probably going to be tons of content.
Yeah,
you know, you're going to get your money's worth, I think. But you're right. It feels weird. It feels like, oh, just this one game that everybody wants will price higher. That just feels like, oh, come on.
I have a question for you guys. Because, like, as a streamer, I come in from a different point of view of, like, I'm going to buy it no matter what. It's going to become an expense because I'm going to be spending hours on it or whatever. And I kind of like when these games are kind of expensive, people will come in like, is it worth my money? I like being able to kind of give that down. Does it make you want to watch a game more when it comes out? Like, do you want to see a first couple of hours before buying it because it goes up in price, or is it kind of like whatever you guys are gonna play no matter what?
It's a good question. I'm more curious what our audience would say to that, because I think I'm a little bit more in your boat of I feel like I need to have an opinion on the thing right when it comes out. You know, I have a hard time putting myself in the mindset of I'll watch and learn early because I want to be the person that's, you know, has the opinion right away. And maybe that's not healthy and probably not good for my pocketbook, but that's kind of where I always have been. Yeah. Christian, what do you think?
For something that I'm not like clamoring to cover, price definitely has an impact on whether or not I purchase it or wait for a sale or wait for, you know, Game Pass or some subscription service to pick it up. But I will usually look for articles detailing experiences versus watching video. Like, I was never, and I know it's funny, and not this week, we're not doing the video, but I was never big on the pivot to video kind of person in consuming my media. I enjoy written prose as
people discuss. You're a writer, you want to read stuff and get in the deep thoughts, right?
That's also my way to, if I'm in front of a screen where I could be watching something, I'm probably playing something.
That's fair.
So you want to be reading while you're playing.
I want to be reading when I can't be playing, you know.
Don't just drive, guys,
everywhere. So
Well, that's true too. Yeah, so, you know, I'm curious what the audience says about the $70, if it's tougher to – I mean, obviously, no one's going to be like, I love it! You know, there's no – that's just not a reaction anybody would have. But it's interesting if that would cause you to be less likely to jump on it day one. But another great point you made, Trixler, is, you know, when I was thinking about jumping onto Forspoken,
yeah,
I was going to wait on that game because I was certain that game would come down in price in mere weeks. Right?
It will. It will, yeah.
It absolutely will.
It will.
But Zelda, as you pointed out, will not. So it is... It's not one of those where we can be like, well, I'll just wait for the sale. It's probably not going to have a sale. Probably not going to have a sale. So that's also a bummer. It's a bummer. But lots of other stuff in the Direct. We got a Pikmin 4 video. We got a confirmation that Game Boy games are coming to Switch Online. Tetris, Super Mario Land 2, Six Golden Coins, The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, tons of games.
I'm interested to hear your thoughts from both of you guys, actually, on this. Both Pikmin 4 and the Game Boy stuff. First off, Pikmin 4, have you guys played any of them?
Yeah, I mean, I played the early Pikmin games. I was never fell in love with that franchise myself.
Yeah, it's an interesting franchise because like it's an RTS on a Nintendo console in its own way. But like it kind of just pulls you in, it's super cozy. But I feel like if you've played one Pikmin... You've played them all. They add like one or two different
this
mechanics.
This one has a doggy.
It does have a doggy. And I was looking at it, I was like, it looks like Pikmin 3. And it still looks like Pikmin 3 with a doggy.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to me. So like, I understand people are into it, but like, I want to know from Pikmin fans, if possible, maybe your viewers, you have a few that really enjoyed this series. Like, what is so exciting about Pikmin that keeps pulling people back? Because I think it's cute, but like other than that, like it doesn't really jump on the page for me.
Well, people have certainly taken the Pikmin control scheme sort of template,
sure,
and applied it. You know, see a lot of indie games that kind of use Pikmin-esque mechanics. So there's something there. People dig it. I just it's never been my jam in particular, but you know, people like little adorable things, and there's even more adorable stuff. There's adorable dog now.
Super cozy.
Yeah. Christian, is there anything else in the Direct other than the super big stuff that jumped out at you?
Splatoon 3. I think the Splatoon 3 expansion pass looks very cool and interesting. I'm a big fan of that game. I praised it a bunch last year. The biggest thing, though, other than what we've already talked about, is Disney Illusion Island. It's exclusive to a Nintendo platform, and it looks to have this beautiful mix of like Rayman Legends and Celeste. You know, there are moments in it where they kind of go into these bubbles, like gravitational shift areas and stuff like that, and dashing through them, and it gave me strong Celeste vibes. That game looks awesome, and I think the four-player co-op part could look cool. I love that new cartoon Mickey Mouse art style that Disney's been using.
It reminded me of Ren and Stimpy a lot, actually.
Yeah, either way, it does have that kind of vibe to it. I really love those cartoons, and I think this game could be a sleeper hit. It comes out in the summer, and I think a lot of people might really find their way into it. I hope it has like some accessibility options or, you know, walks that difficulty line, but I'm guessing it will. But I'm craving that kind of 2D platformer again, and I think it's going to scratch that itch.
Yeah, July 28th is when Disney Illusion Island is going to release. And across this entire Direct, it was all like April, June, July. You know, it was all sort of first half of the year stuff. And there's a lot of stuff. Either of
this
you guys...
Year,
what's that?
It's just this year in general. Like, Nintendo's bringing their in-game. Sony's looking really good, too. Like, I feel like it's going to be a great year to have a buffet of games, just in general, compared to last year.
For sure. Either of you guys... interested in that Bayonetta Origins game, Cereza and the Lost Demon? Very different take on Bayonetta, kind of a top-down isometric like story
it's
game.
It's in Bayonetta 3 a little bit, and I'm sure it will appeal to a lot of people, but that is not what I come to Bayonetta for.
Okay.
For me, personally.
I look at it as one of those games that's going to release, and while no one's going to, it's going to not really be on people's radar, except for like the true hardcore Bayonetta fans that want to go hard in the lore. I think it's going to be one of those games that comes out and people are like, wow, this is great. And just kind of just like be under the surface of something people want to enjoy. Cause it looks fun. It's just, it doesn't appeal to me. When I play Bayonetta, I want action set pieces. I want that hardcore aggression combos that you're playing like crazy. But you know, I'm glad it exists for those that want more Bayonetta lore.
Just to round out some of the bigger news, a new Tron game that's going to be a Tron Identity, a new puzzle adventure. Pretty cool. A new Professor Layton game is coming. Professor Layton in the New World of Steam. And a new Samba de Amigo. Which is going to be using the Joy-Cons as the Sambas. You'll shake the Joy-Cons. I love how it says, you'll shake them gently.
It's a maraca. You go in.
Yeah. Calm down, kid. Calm down. Stop shaking it so violently.
I think that looks fun. Like, that looks really enjoyable.
Yeah, those old Samba de Amigo games were fun. And this one is going to have online play where you can get on and compete with people and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, Nintendo, I think, for as much as Christian, you and I at the end of last year were kind of looking at Nintendo slate and going, where's the beef? You know, what are they going to have other than Zelda? It looks like the first half of the year is pretty packed, and we don't even know what the second half of the year is going to bring.
I'm hopeful for some Mario only because I predicted it.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, that back half is a big old question mark right now, but the front half is stacked.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll put out a new Mario anytime soon, or do you think they're waiting for the next hardware?
I think
I hope so, just so I'm right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Christian just wants to be right. He doesn't care
about it. I agree. I want one.
Yeah, I think we're due for one. I think it's about time. But yeah, I mean, if there's new hardware coming, maybe they will hold it for that. Who knows? Also, a new game from Don't Nod, the folks behind Life is Strange, Harmony Fall of Reverie was announced. June game. So I thought a pretty solid direct. We'll just end, Trixler, with you. What did you think of the Zelda cinematic? The trailer that they showed.
I think it looks fascinating. I have a complicated history with Zelda. So my dad played it when I was a kid, the Super Nintendo one, Link to the Past, which is acclaimed by everybody. And I went to play it when I was a kid, and I accidentally deleted his save file. So I wasn't allowed to play Zelda, and Zelda has always just been empty for me. I finally played my first Zelda last year, but it wasn't like the traditional Zelda. It was Link's Awakening, which I believe isn't like really like a Zelda game to some people, but I enjoyed what it gave. And so now that this new trailer's come out and it looks exciting, it looks hype, and I love open world games, it's just that when Breath of the Wild came out, Horizon came out, and I got lost in that game. So I need to sit down and play these Zeldas because I hear they're fantastic. I think I'm going to do it next month. I'm going to play it and check it out.
You've got scars. You've got
yeah, Zelda I've got scars when it comes to Zelda. And then everyone's like yelling in my face. They're like, you need to play a Zelda. They're the best games.
They show it to my dad.
And then I just have a flashback to my dad saying, you can't play a Super Nintendo for 2 weeks. You're grounded. You know? So that's I'm gonna get through that pain and check out these Zeldas.
Oh, man. Christian, I know you have strong feelings about the trailer.
Oh, no.
private texts. I think a lot. Well, one, there are very few companies that make a trailer as good as a Nintendo. Even Pikmin 4, which I'm not incredibly excited for, it's not a for me game. It was a fantastic trailer, I thought.
It was cute.
It showed off what I think the game will likely be. And I think the same is true for Tears of the Kingdom. It was a fantastic trailer. What rubbed me the wrong way, or I guess didn't get me excited, were all these like wonky vehicles that I'm assuming are doubling down on kind of the physics based, you know, mayhem that people did in the first one. We're like in Breath of the Wild, you would create a raft and little things, this, that, and the other. And then
you put the little the balloon thingies and make the raft float you across the land and stuff. Yeah.
And then what some folks did is they kept tinkering. I mean, it was like truly incredible. The contraptions they built, in that limited tool set. And I feel like Nintendo is like, oh, we're going to give you more tools and see what you unlock. Maybe the game justifies them, but to me, they just looked weirdly out of place on this landscape where there's like a shot of Link riding beautifully, you know, on horseback through beautiful countryside. And it's like majestic in what I picture. And then there's a shot of Link like standing atop a Hummer, you know,
he's like on his jalopy, like hopping across the lake.
And like the sky one looked a little less out of place to me, but even that, I think, you know, looked a little out of place from what I think the world looks like of these castles and these ruins and this, you know, fantasy style thing. And then Link's like,
little clown car.
I'm sure people will have a lot of fun tinkering with it. And I will watch a gif of somebody's contraption and be like, holy crap.
Yeah, I do think you're right. I think that's what kind of what we were speculating via text I think probably those are cobbled together from different parts that you can stick together. That flying one in particular looked like it had some kind of goo that connected the little propellers to each of the edges of the platform that he's standing on. I don't know that to be true, but it does seem like the next logical progression for what people were already doing, the sort of emergent world stuff in Breath of the Wild, where you could, you know, use the combine the powers in various ways to just do things that the game never thought you could. It feels like maybe they'll just really blow the doors off and give you pieces and bits and parts that let you make really cool stuff. I think that'd be pretty neat, but we'll see how it all plays. It does look a little bit like that Banjo-Kazooie game. I can't remember what it was called. Nuts and Bolts. Yes, thank you. Anyway. All right. Well, there's the Nintendo Direct, major part of our week. But Christian, I'm wondering, other than that, what was your story of the week?
Yeah, the Nintendo Direct was definitely the biggest story for me. The other thing I want to spend a little bit of time on is just the buffet where they keep adding new courses very slowly to this Microsoft ABK merger. It's like you're at the Bellagio and you get there right as breakfast ends and before lunch starts, so you only pay the breakfast buffet pricing, but they know that you're waiting for them to transition to lunch, so they take a long time to do it because they don't want you to get two meals for the price of the breakfast buffet, hypothetically.
Oh my gosh, what a beautiful metaphor. I got the whole picture in my head. Thank Certainly, you. Are you a writer, sir? Do you write things?
Unfortunately, there was no video version because I did prepare a whole montage to play under me when I talked there, but you will never get to see it. I'll DM it to you, Trix.
Thank you. I need that.
But we just keep getting new juicy information about this merger as it seems to be going ahead. But the first bit of stuff we got this past week is from the UK Competition and Markets Authority. They released their provisional findings. And then we had Michael Pachner and Nick McKay come out and say, like, hey, we read this stuff and we think it's still going to happen. They've offered remedies to Microsoft to how to try to fix these things. And it all seems like something will be like they're giving Microsoft an olive branch where Microsoft can do one of them and say, like, we did the thing you asked. And they'll be like, yes, you did. And then everyone will kind of move on. Whereas the US government hasn't released, as well as this recording, has not released their kind of list of remedies or what they're seeking. So it seems like folks are still think that this is going to go forward. But my favorite part is like one of the remedies that they were like, there's no way would happen, that they kind of suggested, is that Call of Duty could be available on competing cloud gaming services. We've talked about how Microsoft has been very open to being like, the Switch gets it for 10 years. The Ouya can have it for 5 years.
You get a Call of Duty. Everybody gets a Call of Duty.
Yeah, but it was interesting to see Pachner and McKay kind of say that putting it on other cloud services is perhaps going too far, which I think maybe highlights, you know, Microsoft's big continued next push of how you can play and experience these games. I mean, they did it with the partnership with Epic and Fortnite, where after that, you know, whole battle with Apple and it came up app stores, Microsoft, I think, very smartly partnered with them to make Fortnite available via xCloud with just a Microsoft account, you know, free. You didn't need to have Game Pass Ultimate or anything. If you had a Microsoft account, you could just go in and play and you could play via touch. And I could see a world where Call of Duty is that for them also in a very big way. And sure, you can play it on Switch, you can play it here, but also, you know, as Blizzard told all of us 5 years ago, you all have phones, don't you? And that could be a big avenue for them. So I thought it was interesting to see some prominent analysts kind of lay that out as a bridge too far. They also said they expect to see the acquisition close no later than mid-May.
That's very
soon.
I thought that was fascinating. Then the second part that I'll set up, and then Trickster, I'm curious your thoughts on this and if you find it as amusing as the Bellagio bringing out pizza at 12:30 when they've had pasta out since 11. is the kind of tit for tat that Microsoft and Sony are doing. We're here in the US cases. Microsoft sent essentially a request for documents from Sony that are probably justified in my ex-lawyer opinion, but also seem very petty, where it's like, we want all this information on these seven CEOs and we want documents going back for years. And Sony has now rejected those requests and straight out called it out and said that, like, this is a high volume of documents, and you're just trying to be burdensome. All you're trying to do is harass us. And Microsoft is like, I don't know, you didn't give us the documents. And it's just fascinating to me to see like high level CEOs of, you know, billion-dollar companies acting like my fourth grader on the playground. And I love it.
Here's the funny part. I had no idea any of this has happened, but now that you have laid it all out for me, I'm like, oh my gosh, that is petty. I kind of want to watch all of that. My whole like thoughts about the Microsoft and Activision Blizzard, I guess, cooperation and trying to join up together, I just like, I'm like, whatever, man, just give me more video games and revive Heroes of the Storm. That's where my entire brain has been. But like, I didn't realize it had gotten this petty to this amount of a wire. That is wild. And this is all like public information stuff. I can't believe I missed all of that. Thank you for the update.
What's the thing? It's not super sexy as presented, but then you get super sexy stuff that sometimes will make the big headlines where I think, Jeff, was it like, someone said that like, I think it was Sony that said like, our games suck. Without Call of Duty, we have not. Like, I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, look at our crappy game. This game only sold this. And it's like, oh, wow.
No, they basically like threw Battlefield under the bus. Like, all we've got is Battlefield. Right. It's garbage.
That's right. That's right.
If Call of Duty becomes exclusive, what are we going to do? Battlefield's garbage.
It's like we get stuff like that that comes out of it. And if this information from folks like Jim Ryan, who I do believe is an appropriate custodian of documents, if their company is making this claim that this merger would be detrimental to, you know, their business. But, you know, even in my limited experience, never in a case of this magnitude, there's always like this broad blanket request for any document that might be viable. And then it's like, okay, well, here's 20 terabytes of data. Have fun. And you're like, oh God, we asked for too much.
But everything goes slow. That's why everything is slow.
Yes.
That's why it's shocking to me. They're like, mid-May should be all fine.
And I wonder if it is just so much that everybody's going to be like, I guess Battlefield's good enough.
Well, Christian, you actually went to law school as opposed to me, who just watched Law & Order. During that same
period. What about Legally Blonde?
That counts for me.
Did you watch Legally Blonde?
No, never seen Legally Blonde. That's how little
really?
I care.
Oh my, that's
a good one.
I've
literally never seen Legally Blonde.
It's so good. Don't watch two. One's fantastic. All
right. Don't watch two.
I just watched all of the Magic Mike movies this week. So
those are actually so good too.
I think the second one is good.
The second one's way better. First one was like an indie development film.
The first one is very dark. And it's like, yeah, this isn't fun.
Jeff prefers his men oiled is what we just learned.
The second one is actually legitimately fun.
Yeah, it's enjoyable.
Anyway, I don't know how we got started on Magic Mike.
You brought it up.
The Magic Mike of law, of lawyering. I'm viewing all this at this point. I was super invested in this story for a few months. And now I feel like this is all the Sturm und Drang that's going to mean nothing. This is the sound and fury signifying nothing. Because it's like, oh, look at all this. Oh, it's going to be all fine by mid-May. It's like, what's the point? It's just, it's nonsense, and it's all going to be closed by mid-May. At that point, we'll figure out what Microsoft had to concede in order to make it happen. And this is the yada, yada, yada that gets to us having an actual merger happen. And it feels like, at this point, it's like, well, okay. This is what needs to happen. Let it happen.
Yes, I think you're right, hypothetically, and I think that's part of what drove me away from my practice of law in general was that, like, why can't people just get together? Because even in the litigations I would do would be like, I see what's going to happen here. I see the settlement, but it's like, you do this, and we do this, and you do this, and you do this, and then I object to that, and you know that was a bridge too far, and then it's like, at the end, we're like, here's $100, you know, whatever.
Sounds like an extreme... lesson in patience. That doesn't sound fun at all.
Well, that's what lawyering is. It's all these details that ultimately it's like, they never did this in Law and Order. It just went bong bong and then it was over. I was done.
I had a little button in my desk and a little sound cue. You know, someone would walk in, I'd be like, bong bong, and they'd have to leave. That's just
can we just
works,
get to the order part, please? Law is only supposed to be a half an hour. We got like the second half an hour is the order. Anyway.
I think the reason this stuff is prolonged is, yes, just things take a long time. But also, I do think there is something about, as I'm reading a couple of books about corporate espionage, because I find that fascinating, about bringing other rivals' companies' documents out in public light when you're given that opportunity. And I think it's like, oh, you're going to object to this? Well, then we are going to get as much of your information out publicly as we can, because we want to, you know, hang your dirty laundry out to dry.
Right.
I also think part of it is setting the stage for what might happen next. I love Sony's games. I'm going to talk about it. Not this episode later. And I talked about it last year about like just the games that they released last year easily could have been my five favorite games. Like they had a incredible 2022. I think they're going to have a incredible 2023 as well. But they do not have the financial reserves that Microsoft does. And I think if Sony doesn't kind of start setting the stage for where this line should be drawn, and with perhaps a more friendly FTC in terms of monopoly and trying to break those things up, then I think they could envision a future where they get steamrolled entirely. And I think that's kind of what's at stake for them right now, in addition to trying to get as many concessions as they can, because you know, none of this lawyering is cheap.
No, it's great.
Your brain is so big.
I'm glad you keep bringing it up because it is fascinating. It is fascinating. Yeah. But it's weird to me that we keep hearing all these stumbling blocks and, oh, no, this and that. And then it's always at the end. It's like, but it should all still be fine by mid-May.
That's why I thought Packner and McKay's comment to me seemed the most enlightened, because usually it's like Phil Spencer saying that. And I'm like, you're saying that like, you know, I'm saying we're going to win it all this year at preseason.
You're
know?
Invested. Yeah, you are a non-impartial party. Pachter and these Webbush analysts are definitely outside observers. So we don't need to spend a lot of time on my story of the week. I think obviously the Nintendo Direct was the big story, but I just want to take 2 seconds and give high fives to Nintendo also this week, because in a corporate environment where everybody's doing layoffs and mm-hmm. rollbacks and squeezing the little guy, closing studios and contracting, Nintendo has announced plans to raise employees' pay by 10%, despite the fact that it also has a lowered financial forecast. So Reuters is reporting that Nintendo's like, hey, you know, everything's hard right now. Let's give people a little extra money, which is a nice thing to see. High five to Nintendo. I wish this was not just a sort of Japanese cultural, something the Japanese government is kind of advising to companies right now. I wish the American government was a little less awful and would do.
What a world that would be.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be
fine,
so nice.
I'll pay $70 for Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, I know, right? It means people get 10% more in their pocket. I think that's pretty good. But yeah
take care of people.
Maybe that's why they're allowed to do that. Maybe that's why, you know, that's a good point. All right. Let us move on now because we got a lot of games to get through. Let's talk about the games that we have been playing in a segment we call The Playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Okay, before we get into the playlist this week, I want to talk briefly about the controversy surrounding Hogwarts Legacy, a game that I was given an early review code for, and I have played quite a bit in preparation for this week's episode. And I wrote this. I don't usually write up what I want to say in the episode, but this week
can tell, Jeff.
Yeah. I wrote this up because I wanted to get it right, and I really had some things I wanted to say about it, because we are going to talk about Hogwarts Legacy. So this is what I wrote. The first thing I want to make clear is that I believe trans rights are human rights. There's no ambiguity for me. I support the trans community's goal of equality and protection under the law unequivocally. Anyone who has listened to this podcast for any length of time knows that we have welcomed many trans guests to the show, and I will work very hard to make sure that continues. Diversity of perspective and opinion is a big part of what makes this show what it is, and I'm proud that so many different people from so many different parts of gaming culture have shared their voices with us over the years. I have also read a lot about what has been written in the trans community about how truly hurtful J.K. Rowling's public stance is, how her words have been used to justify hate and violence. No one should ever be attacked for simply existing. And I can certainly understand the desire to prevent more royalty checks from going to someone who seems to be leading the charge of intolerance, or sales numbers from serving as a tacit endorsement of her views. But I also think that video games are art, and art can be judged on its own merits. In this case, particularly a work of art that Rowling had so little to do with. Is it true that this very rich woman is likely to get marginally richer if this game is a huge success? Probably. Will she be hurt or chastened in any significant way if it's a failure? Probably not. So rather than looking at playing or discussing this video game as a symbol of support or rejection of what she stands for, I'd rather look at what the game itself, what the work of art that she clearly had almost no part in actually making itself, is trying to stand for. And here is where I'm heartened. Here is where I believe talking about the game on this podcast is justified. Because Hogwarts Legacy, the video game, so far as I've played it, seems to want to be about the exact opposite of intolerance. This is one of the most inclusive, diverse, and emotionally intelligent AAA games that I've played. Now, granted, we're still talking about a game where you blast goblins with magic spells, but insofar as it's possible to create an experience where you do that, and are also a kind, empathetic, thoughtful person, Hogwarts Legacy is doing it. I look at this game as a repudiation of J.K. Rowling, not a celebration of her. This is a game obsessed with being decent and considerate of others, regardless of who they are. There are quests where you literally just help someone feel better about themselves, help them be accepted for being different. Now, the game is filled with such a variety of different kinds of people from different backgrounds, the central theme of which seems to be joy in learning about them, in being open to their lived experiences. And yes, there's even a trans character in the game, which some have viewed as tokenism, but I can't help but see as a massive middle finger to Rowling, an assertion that she no longer holds any ownership over this fictional universe or this fandom. Listen, I've never even really liked Harry Potter. I read all the books back in the early 2000s, and I've been criticizing them ever since. I don't hold the movies in any high esteem either. I've no nostalgic desire to defend this property or its creator at all. But I do think this work of art can be judged by what it is actually doing, not by what the creator of the IP upon which it is based has spewed out on Twitter. Just like I think we can still talk about shooters in a culture where gun violence is out of control, or the next Diablo game at a time when the company that made it is responsible for some truly terrible things. This is all to say that my approach to Hogwarts Legacy, as it has been with everything else problematic in gaming culture, is not to ignore it or pretend it doesn't exist, but to talk about it in context, to acknowledge that there are legitimate reasons that this piece of entertainment might cause bad feelings. The line is going to be different for everyone, and I respect anyone's decision to avoid this game or to not talk about it. I know that Christian has made that choice. But I hope I've laid out a reasonable argument as to why I've decided to play it and talk about it publicly. I sincerely hope that doing so doesn't cause anyone harm or create a situation where future guests are less likely to want to join us. I'll put a timestamp in the show notes this week. If you don't want to hear about it and prefer to just skip to the next topic, you can do that. But I actually think this game, as a game, is really quite well made, and I'm excited to discuss why. So that's my statement. And I know,
well said.
Thank you. And Trixler, I know you've been playing Hogwarts Legacy as well.
Yeah.
And I think the game is excellent, like exceptionally well made.
Yeah, I think that if you have read the books or did watch some movies and you enjoy the world that existed and you wish that you could experience your own world with your own character and be able to go down, you know, the whole flow chart of what you think a magical Wizarding World would be like, this game has nailed it. It is out of the park great in terms of an open world game where you just vibe and you go full cozy. Like, every single moment I've had in this game is wonderful, and the attention to detail that we have from developers, the hours of work they put into it has been phenomenal. Like, a slight spoiler, if you're walking down a hallway and you see those statues that, of course, are magical and they're moving, they have characters, they have personality, there's one that loves to hum. And as you walk by, it's constantly humming, and its friend jabs it because it's tired of hearing the hummy. And once you're playing the game through a couple of hours, you walk by that hallway a couple of times, suddenly that humming and that playful, like, elbows that keeps happening turns into a full-out brawl in the middle of a hallway of Hogwarts. And it's awesome. And you're rewarded for existing and living in this world. That is repeated over and over and over. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, Hogwarts as a location is so alive. Books are flying off the shelves. All the paintings are moving. And there's just so much detail. It's so well thought out. It feels like a place where everything, you know, everything is magical and can do anything, but also everything has a purpose and a place. And it's extraordinary how cool Hogwarts is just as a place to walk around in. And there's puzzles and little hidden things to find in every little nook and cranny. You know, it's, you can use magic in the place to find things. Like, the creation of Hogwarts as a place. And like I said, I don't even really, there's no love for me in particular for Harry Potter or the Harry Potter verse or Hogwarts as a place. Like, I've never gone, oh man, I would love to go to Hogwarts. I just, as a person who loves fantasy and fantasy settings, it's one of the coolest realized fantasy settings I've ever experienced in a video game. There's just so many cool places to find and discover and how stuff is connected to other stuff. And I mean, the game is, I'm playing it on PC. Are you playing it on PC?
I played on PS5. Okay. I decided to grab it there.
Yeah. It's gorgeous. I mean, I'm playing it with the beefy GP, and it supports DLSS 3.0, and it is so pretty and so beautiful. I know some people have complained about some hiccups. There are some slight little loads when you walk into a door, you know, into a new area or something, but it's very minor in my experience. I have a pretty, you know, beefy computer, but I haven't had any problems there, and the game is just gorgeous. And you start in Hogwarts. I mean, you know, you start with a preamble before you get to Hogwarts, but when you get to Hogwarts, there's so much Hogwarts there, and you're going to classes and you're meeting all these cool characters, and there's, you know, you do the sorting hat and you know, find out which house you're going to be in. And there's like so much to do. And you're like, wow, this, just being in Hogwarts is amazing. And going to classes is fun. And I'm like, oh man, they should make more role-playing games where in order to get skills, you have to like go to a school and learn them. It's like a neat thing in just in a role-playing game to have that feature of like acquiring skills by literally learning how to use them from a teacher. That's cool. Rather than leveled up and it clicked on a thing and now I can do fireballs, you know?
Yeah, I think that's something that's becoming more common in games. I think Three House Fire Emblems did that as well. And they're just slowly trying to introduce more into people just living in a world, because it seems like people want to do that. They're totally cool with just being as immersed as possible. I used to be one of these gamers. In fact, it's kind of a meme on my stream where I hold W, I just run through things, right? I run through main quests, like I stop and I don't look around. And I've gotten better about it just because I've been working out for the last couple of years. But this is the first time that I've played an open world game aside from Horizon. I will always put Horizon on a pedestal and stand before the sun and say, this is my religious game that I will one day join. But this is one of the first games that I've actually just sat down and just got lost in. The first part of the game, you're only actually supposed to be at Hogwarts for like 3 or 4 hours, and then you move to like Hogsmeade, etc., and the game opens up, you get to the tutorial. But I found out that like I spent 13 hours in the tutorial section just running around.
There's
Hogwarts.
So much to do.
Like, you can get lost. You do it all on your terms. There's people to talk with. There's little quests, like you said, to make them feel good. Like, I was being a Slytherin. This is actually a really good example of, like, you can be a butthead if you want. I chose Slytherin because I wanted to play it for my girlfriend. She doesn't really play games, and she wants to watch it because she's into Hogwarts. And there was this little girl that lost her gobstones, and she was being a bit of a butthead about it. She was like, I beat them up, and these gobstones I could throw in their face, and it makes them smell bad, and I find that hilarious. And so I went and found the gobstones, because they all hid them from her in retaliation, and I picked the Slytherin option of, I'm going to hold on to them, finders keepers. And then she actually, like, responded back to me, looked me in the eyes, was like, I'm going to learn curses and ruin all of you now. This is your fault that you have made me feel awful. And I felt so bad about that that I am now a Slytherin that is doing good and slowly becoming Hufflepuff, because there are things that you can do in this game that can feel bad or feel good, whatever you want to choose, and live out your life of being a wizard in your way.
Yeah, and really, as I said, it feels like this sort of emotional life of the characters is invested in a way most games don't do.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, the teachers are really decent, wonderful people that are, you know, you can have whole conversations with teachers about how, you know, it's important to them to like nurture kids and yeah. show them the right, and they love grow. Teaching and there's so much diversity and different kinds of people from all different walks of life, and you can learn about their, you know, where they come from, and I think the world building is extraordinary, and like you said, like, you know, as much as Hogwarts is incredible and feels like this place that I kind of want to be in, then you like leave for the first time, you go to Hogsmeade, and you're like, oh, there's this whole thing, and then you realize, oh my gosh, there's this massive map, and then you get your broom for the first time. You finally get the ability to fly, and I'm like, oh yeah. My God. This is...
Have you flown over the trees and turned the corner and saw Hogwarts in the background?
Dude, it's amazing.
Breathtaking.
Yes. I mean, it is truly like... Honestly, it's so unfortunate to me that Agreed. This game is wrapped up in such a... you know, vile kind of messaging, and it become this talisman for people yeah. that, you know, have so much, you know, hate and negativity, because this game should be this is like a game of the year candidate for me. It is really that much fun. We haven't even talked about the fact that combat is a blast. Like the idea of using a wand in this game, it's so much fun. The animations are really cool.
Yeah.
The feeling of everything, the way you can chain different combos together and juggle enemies in the air. It's a blast.
Yeah. When I first started playing, I actually thought it was clunky until I realized what you were saying. It's more of a rhythm that you actually play. You go into combos, you pull someone towards you, Leviosa, you pop them up, you bring in your damage, you're doing color-coded spells in between. You really do feel like you're mastering the magic as you're playing.
Yeah,
and it hits after like 4 or 5 hours. I don't know if it was immediate for you, but for me, it took like 3 hours. Like, I'm not so sure about the comet, but I love the world. And then I started to get into the open world and getting into bigger fights. And I agree, like, it evolves incredibly well. The talent system really teaches you how to just own magic, if you will.
Yeah,
and I'm all about that.
They do a really cool thing. Like, you get invited to the dueling, the sort of underground, you know, Hogwarts dueling club.
Yeah. To your point earlier, the teachers know about, but they're allowing it to happen because they think it's good for the growth of the students. I love that little detail.
Yeah, it's and there's where I kind of, it really trains you, like, oh, hey, you can juggle enemies for a long, long time. You get these achievements. All of the XP in the game, all the leveling in the game is handled through challenges and achievements that you are, you know, the game is saying, hey, try to do this, try to do these things, juggle an enemy for at least 5 seconds. Now try to juggle them for at least 10 seconds. So, and those are all little mini quests, little challenges that are how you level up in the game. I've put about 20 hours into it, a little less than 20 hours into it so far. I can't comment on where the story goes, but I can say the story quests that I've done have been really well made, really cool. Like, there's so many moments of pure wonder where you discover something and, you know, the world kind of transforms around you in this magical way, and everything feels tactile, and, you know, it's not everything moves and slides, and they use the iconography and the sort of visual effects of the film franchise for everything. So it really does feel like you've stepped into the film franchise in a very significant way. And all of the nooks and crannies of the world, there's stuff to discover, stuff to find, stuff to that wows you, because everything feels alive and designed.
Like, in terms of money, it's worth your money, especially if you want like games that have games within a game. Like, I don't know about you, but the potion making and the beast holding that, I've been lost in that for hours. It's kind of like the Gwent for me in this game. I think the only bummer is there is no Quidditch available. The Quidditch season, for story release reasons, is not available this season.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's a DLC or something in the future, but
The reason is that J.K. Rowling is terrible at designing a game Like the Quidditch makes no sense on the face of it. Like,
sure, 150 it points. Yeah.
No sense. There's no point in playing any part of the game other than finding the snitch. Like the snitch is OP to a point where it makes the whole rest of the game irrelevant. So it's like, well, we can't put Quidditch into our video game because it makes no sense. It makes no sense. Anyway.
you have thoughts about Quidditch.
I think her writing is not great. Anyway, there is tons of stuff to do. There are those little mini games. One of the ones I love is that one that where you pull the spheres toward you with magic and you try to let them. It's almost like bocce ball.
Wait, did you actually win that?
Oh, dude, I've won a bunch of it. You can get into a whole series of like a whole tournament.
I lost so many, I gave up. What's the secret?
I love that game. It's awesome. Yeah, you can play like these cool like physics games with the other students, and they challenge you. It really is an open world game, but everything feels justified in a way most aren't. I mean, even down to the point where, you know, you have the thing that is in every video game where it tells you your path to the next objective. Well, it makes sense in this world because a little magical fairy thing pops out of your book and flies through the world. It's like, oh, most games, it's just like, well, you can see the path there. And, well, don't worry about it. It's a video game. And here, everything is integrated. Everything feels part of this magical landscape. It's an extraordinary game. And as I said, it's such a shame that it has all this baggage on it because – I mean, I want to be high-fiving Avalanche. I want to be telling them how important key games. I want to be, you know, screaming from the rooftops how awesome this experience is. Even like me, somebody that wouldn't be drawn to a Harry Potter game because I don't have any affinity for the franchise, I'm having a blast because it's a very well-made open-world third-person action game that has tons of cool things to do, a great story, incredible visuals. Like, it is also some of the best voice acting I've ever heard in a video game. I love the voice acting. It makes me cringe even more for Midnight Suns, which is like, come on, you can do better than this. It is possible to have great voice acting in video games that feels cinematic, feels, you know. So I don't know. I'm glad you like it as much as I do. I've felt so conflicted about singing its praises because I can totally understand people's negativity around it and feeling conflicted about even wanting to support it in any sense. But man, it's a great, great game.
I echo your sentiments completely all the way through, man. It's cozy. I think if you're on the fence about it and you just want to look at it as a game only, you should pick it up and give it a chance because it's there. It's worth your money. It's worth the time.
Yeah.
And it'll invite you to the world and it will let you know that the world can be magical and beautiful at the same time. And you can be a good person. And honestly, in some moments, it makes you feel like you should be a good person, you know?
I think that's wonderful. I also love any game where I'm getting new items that give me cool stats and they're not, you know, awesome armor or sword. I mean, like getting a rad scarf or a pair of spectacles.
It's a fashion, dude. It's fashion souls, but in Hogwarts. You got to be all about that. You got to look so good if you're going to be a wizard.
It's great. All right. Well, we will move on now. And I know you have been playing a lot of other stuff, Trixer. So what else is on your playlist?
Yeah, this month's been a really, really good month for just games releasing in general, but also for revisiting some old ones. Hi-Fi Rush, we talked about it a little bit earlier. I'm not sure if you guys talked about it on a recent episode or not, but I am gushing over this game. A rhythm game with Kingdom Hearts float combat with an incredible like 9-10 hour story that is just nailing it on the dialogue. Like some games have a hard time nailing that humor. It can be a little bit too much. Scary games go a little bit too scary. But this game is just perfect. It felt like it was just like singing to my personality of this comic book style, a little bit of like a more cel-shaded Into the Universe, if you were kind of looking at Spider-Man, kind of get that visual approach.
Yeah.
And then with just a ragtag team trying to take on corporations, right? And I'm sure everyone has opinions on capitalism in some way or some form, so be aware of that type of interline storyline that's happening. But it was just a drop from Microsoft. I picked it up, and I just played it all week. The challenges are great. The difficulty is perfect. The music is wonderful. They have 9-inch nails on the record while you're running through levels, and everything is synced up to the beat. I love it. I know you guys played it a little bit, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've played it as much as Christian has, but I feel like someone like you, who is, you know, God-tier gamer, streamer, somebody who I think, plays games at a much higher level than I do just naturally. I feel like this game...
Well, thank you.
No, I think that's absolutely true. I think this game rewards that level of skill. Like, it has a high skill ceiling, right? Even though you're forced to kind of be on the beat, there's still a high skill ceiling there, right?
That's what I loved about it, yeah, is you can be perfect if you want to be in rhythm. Like, part of the reason that I enjoy rhythm games so much is I was in band in middle school all the way up into high school. And so being on the beat is very rewarding to me. I love that feeling. But this game also says, if you're not on the beat, that's okay. You just can't go for the super high combos or anything. You can still play it and enjoy the story and still get your hits in. You'll just be a little bit off on parries and whatnot, which I thought was a kind of a cool addition. Because sometimes you play rhythm games and, like, it feels bad to miss stuff. Like, you play Guitar Hero and it just
squonk, squonk, squonk.
Oh, that feels awful.
Yeah.
This game doesn't do that to you. It lets you go through the attack. You'll just miss out on the combo points and some other things, but those are kind of like for perfectionists. So I love that it kind of includes everybody and shows you how awesome it can be to do the music. Well, I mean, what about you, Christian? You've played a lot of it, right?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of this game. I think, almost any other year, it'd probably be talked about at the end of the year for me. And sure, maybe it still will be. I just kind of see some of the other games. I mean, we just talked about what Nintendo announced just for the first half of the year and some of the other stuff I think is coming this year. But it's an incredible game. And I think I say this a lot, when I think games kind of hit everything they're going for. And I mean it. And I mean it here. I think this represents a studio operating at its fullest confidence. You know, they were so confident in the product they were making and delivered on the promise of the premise. And I think that's so awesome to see. Because oftentimes we talk about games where it's like, you know, Assassin's Creed 1 showed a lot of potential and we can't wait to see what the next... I hope they get to make a sequel because, you know, blah, 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 blah. This is like, no, Hi-Fi Rush is done. You know, yes, I'd love to see sequels, but it is a complete game top to bottom. They knew what they were making, what they set out to make. They delivered on the promise of the premise. And the world is so, yeah, the world is so vibrant. I would love, you know, like, pick your streaming service, Netflix, kids cartoon, of this world.
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
it's so vibrant. I want the Peppermint, you know, origin story fully fleshed out. Like, I think she's such a fun, dynamic character. It's just full of fun characters and worlds. I also want to, like, and I have not rolled credits on the game yet because it's only February, but we are firmly in too many games. But I would love to see, like, again, in a cartoony way, like, when does this mega corporation turn heel? Because it does seem like there were moments where it was like, no, we want to build a better tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, and then it becomes dystopic, and then it becomes tricking people into getting these body modifications for nefarious purposes. But it is such a complete world. And I think for folks who maybe have heard too, it was like a stealth drop, and then I feel like we all went, you know, bananas for it. If you have not played it because you're like, there's no way it lives up to the hype. Yes, it does.
It does. And it's on Game Pass too, which is like a heck of a deal right now.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So, like, you got to give it
no brainer.
Chance.
No brainer. Mm-hmm. Christian, you kind of blew my mind with this notion of a Saturday morning cartoon in this world, just because I started thinking about how it could be infused with music throughout also. Like, the whole, you know, half hour episode could be in rhythm. What a cool idea for a show. I've never seen a show that has done that before. The whole thing could just be bomb, bomb, bomb. They could take that concept of the game and make it a narrative concept. It'd be awesome.
Glee, yeah, but an awesome action set piece. Yes.
Not tacitly acknowledged, you know, like, even just the way that it happens in the game, where, like, the vents are like,
yeah, the whole environment is in rhythm through this entire, like, 22-minute story. That'd be rad.
It's very cool.
It would rival Bluey. It could do it.
Oh, now you've gone too far. Nothing can rival Bluey. What else is on your playlist, Trixler?
I've actually been revisiting some other games. One is a game that my heart bleeds because no one is playing it. Gundam Evolution, which is a 4v4 arena, or I'm sorry, 6v6 arena game in the style of Halo in terms of that, like, time to kill, you know, you take a couple of shots, you burn people down, you play for space, but with, like, boosters, and it's got Gundams in it. So it's one of those games that kind of released right before Overwatch, so people were looking at it, checking it out, kind of enjoying it, and then Overwatch 2 came out, and it just, the player base plummeted. So I've been running viewer games at night, and I would love for anyone that wants to play a fun arena shooter to come join us. You're all invited. Jeff, Christian, please feel free to come in. Your viewers are welcome to play as well. And we kind of just get together and we play some Gundam characters and have some nice sweaty try-hard customs. And it's incredibly fun. It reminds me of the LANs that I used back in the day with Halo 2 and Halo 3, where we'd all bring our Xboxes, get some pizza and some Mountain Dew, and just game for the entire weekend. And it's kind of got that vibe going for it. It's just not as popular as some other games. So I've been playing that, and please feel free to check it out. It is free to play. The only problem that I have with it is it does have that Eastern model of like grinding to get your characters, or, you know, of course, loot boxes and paying for your characters, which are really expensive. So just be aware of that. And then I'm back on that League train, man. As, yeah. Any League player will tell you, or any MOBA player will tell you, I guess, if I want to extend it to the genres, don't play MOBAs. They're going to poison your brain. But if you are playing them, this season of League has been pretty fun for me. It's a little bit more tank heavy compared to prior seasons. And they're also trying something new this year where they're running the season split. So you'll have your placements and you'll play for a rank for about half the year, and then it will reset and we'll play for another half of the year. So it's kind of got me in that grind mode once again. And we've been running customs and enjoying the ranked experience for that. So
Red.
If you ever want to play, hop on.
Is Heroes just completely dead? Is the community just kind of gone to the wind?
I've also been doing the custom games. I've kind of been transitioning a little bit more because, like, while I've been doing more variety in the morning on my stream, I've been loving the single player games. I do know that, like, people first started watching me for PvP stuff. So I'm kind of tired of competitive gaming in general. I feel like everyone kind of quits nowadays instead of, like, playing a game out. So I've been doing custom games instead and inviting people that have that try hard mentality but want to have fun. And Heroes has actually been on that record. If you guys would love to do a Heroes night, if you want to come in, I would love to have you guys play as well. I miss old 5v5 team fights in Heroes, so we do that once every 3 weeks usually.
Oh, cool.
Is my visit to Heroes.
Oh, man. So, I'm tempted to do that.
You should. Come play. You pick your favorite character, and I will support you to my best capability. I want people to have fun in these games because I miss that.
I am rusty. I'm out the game.
Come play. I want you to. Christian, please come. I want you guys to play.
I have a confession. Trickster confession. I think it was last night as we're recording, maybe 2 nights ago. I was watching you play some Gundam. And one of my kids came over and they're like, oh, what are you watching, Dad? And I was like, oh, you know, he's a friend. Been on the show before, gonna be on the show. I'm just checking out what he's playing right now. And like, oh, what is that? And I was like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, kind of explaining it as they're walking over, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, and, you know, I think you're on like a 12 kill streak or something like that. And I'm like, hey, he's really good at these games too. So you're going to see, like, you know, I wouldn't be able to do this, but it's fun to watch. It's like, he's really good.
Thank
the daughter
you.
Walks over right as you get like flanked and just like taken down. And I think like the.
You cursed the me, Christian. You
my
cursed
daughter.
Me.
We talked about like our superpower already. Yeah.
Yeah. They kind of like. Not disintegrate, but like kind of crumble apart a little bit. Like it zooms out to third person when you die. And my daughter just goes, eh, you could have done that.
She knows you well. She knows you well,
and
Dad.
I was like, wait, I mean, thanks for the burn, but you missed the. Okay, yeah, good point. Okay.
Amazing.
That is awesome.
So, Christian, you downloaded the new hotness, Metroid Prime Remastered. I have not checked it out yet because basically I don't have a Switch anymore. It's just my son's Switch. But man, just watching the video of it brought back like almost Pavlovian response in me. It was such sense memory of days on the GameCube right after college playing Metroid Prime. Does it hold up? Are you enjoying it?
Listeners, get it out of your system now for making fun of me. For this being one of my five favorite games of the
year. Ruh-roh.
If Dead Space can be one of my five favorite games of the year, which I totally think it can be.
If I'm right about one thing, I can justify myself.
If I'm right about me making the rules however I want.
Yeah. If I can make
when
the
you're
rules,
right, you're right.
I can follow my rules. That's what you just
what
said.
Are the rules? The rules are there are no rules. I guess my biggest weakness is that I have too many strengths. It is an absolutely phenomenal game. I've raved about this game, you know, over the years, and I've talked recently about playing it again on my PC, running emulation and the 4K texture pack. And I've talked about playing it again on my Steam Deck via emulation and the Prime hack. Method that gives you that dual analog control,
which by the way just, kids today great. You do not know how hard we had it back then, you know what I'm saying? Playing that game on a GameCube, you just go, oh, obviously it uses twin sticks. No We had to push a button to move the camera. You understand what I'm saying to you?
That is annoying. Ouch.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, so I don't disagree with you, but I think the game, as Nintendo does, was so smartly designed around that control scheme. And yes. Metroid Prime Remastered has that control scheme in it still if you want to play that way. And it's not a bad way to play. Metroid Prime is not a fast-moving first-person shooter. I read a review somewhere, I think maybe it was Polygon, where it was like, in Metroid Dread, Samus is a hunter. In Metroid Prime, she's a scientist. And it is a slower-paced game where stopping to stand to aim totally works. Like, they designed the game with that control scheme in mind. Does dual analog sticks make it better? Yes, it does. But the original way, I don't think, is a bad way to play. It is different. I think it'd be harder for people now to play that. But when it came out, we have to remember, you know, Halo was just coming out and kind of defining what first person controls would be on consoles. You know, we were still in that era of like, what are these things? What will be the standard going forward? And Nintendo had this wonky GameCube controller with a C stick, you know, for the right analog stick. So I think they built their game for that controller. This game, Metroid Prime Remastered, is one of the finest gaming experiences I think you can have today. It holds up extremely well, Jeff, and it defaults to that twin stick control, so it doesn't even make you go into options to change it to that. That is the default way to play it. And it's so smartly designed with how the original game holds up that you still have the lock on to target approach, and using the right stick, you can free aim and take people down. But again, this isn't a precision shooter. It's not, oh, I need to get this space pirate in the head.
It's kind of not even a shooter. I mean, it is.
I mean,
but it's like, when you could talk about what a modern shooter is, it's not that.
Yes, correct. And there's cool stuff where, again, it's built into the system of, like, as Samus is a scientist, where you're scanning enemies. And then when you scan an enemy, you reveal its weak spot. And the game will then auto lock you to that weak spot.
Oh,
you
know, like, cool.
That's where the smart lock comes, because you, as the character, have discovered that. So why would your auto target system, you know, point at the tractor beam when you need to get it into the air vent? You know, like, it is very smartly designed in how that works. And I think that this presentation, the Nintendo Direct presentation, actually did this game a disservice in how they presented it. And I get they're calling it remastered versus a remake, but it is top to bottom graphically totally redone in a way that it is one of the best looking games on the Switch, which you could, I guess, caveat like, oh, it's on the Switch, of course, blah, blah, blah. But the original Metroid Prime was so beautifully art designed and directed, and it's not trying to recreate human one-to-one. It's not Uncharted 4. You know, it's not going for that approach. It's the stylized alien world where, like, the angular designs and stuff like that, I think, still work today. Also, it is a game that, like Wind Waker from the GameCube, holds up in its original form very well. That being said, the remastering of the graphics they did make it vastly superior in just terms of visual fidelity and presentation. But I think a testament to what Metroid Prime is, the, you know, mesh behind everything is one-to-one original. So the gameplay feels exactly as it should. It's kind of like when they did Halo Combat Evolved Remastered, right? And they put this huge coat of paint on it, but you could instantly switch from old graphics to new graphics and see, like, this is still the same game running underneath. Yeah. And that's what Metroid Prime Remastered is, but with great updated controls and a graphics overhaul that makes this game even more lush and more rich and more rewarding to explore. It is not a fast-paced game. It is not a game where you're 1 hour in and you're like, oh, I've seen everything there is to see. Like, it is, there is backtracking, there is taking your time, there is spending your time in this world. And I think it is one of the finest examples of a video game truly ever made. And I used to say that the Prime Hack version with 4K textures emulated was the definitive way to experience Metroid Prime. It's no longer the case. The best version of the game is now Nintendo's re-release of it. This remaster is exquisite. The time Karen Love put into it is top-notch. The updated control schemes. You can also play like the Wii approach, where you have like a waggle stick if you want to like point to aim, which I wouldn't recommend, but it's a novelty that's fun to see them carry over. And you can also play with a little bit of gyro assist. Like, the care put into this game is top notch. And I think calling it just kind of an up-res port sells short the work that went into the updating of the textures and the art and some of the design of these characters. It is a phenomenal game. If you have not played it, I mean, it is old, 20-year-old game. If you have not played it, I promise you it stands the test of time and stands up there like any modern game that would come out in 2023 as an exquisite experience. And I think for a lot of folks, it will be their first time playing it.
I would argue
it'd be one of their favorite games ever.
Yeah, it'll be my first time. Sold. I'm buying it. Thank you, Christian.
I can endorse the fact that it's one of the greatest games of all time.
How's truly, the atmosphere?
Oh, it's really
all
cool.
Atmosphere.
It's all atmosphere. Yeah, really.
It's like when I see Metroid games, that's what I think. I think of like if you give yourself a couple minutes to just like sit in the world and breathe, you feel enveloped, right?
Yes.
And okay.
You feel like you're discovering a place that exists.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so smartly designed where like you'll see a thing and you'll chase it down. Like it does the Metroid-y thing or like the, you know, later Castlevania games where you just like, well, I can do here, and you follow this thread and you get there and then it's a dead end. And the game's not afraid to give you dead ends. And you open the map and you're like,
something that you're like, I can't go here yet. Right. You know, that's one of the best feelings in that game is seeing a thing and going, oh, someday I'm going to be able to go there. yeah, it's cool.
And the way it leads you on without always pointing you in the direction, right? It's not always telling you, go here, go here, go here, go here, go here, go here. It trusts the player to take the time and figure out what they're doing, much as the character would in the world. It's exquisite.
The reason that I can wholeheartedly say it's one of the best games of all time is that even just hearing you talk about it, Christian, I can close my eyes and I feel like I'm there in my friend's apartment right after college, trying to beat that final boss, beating my head against the wall. That final boss was at the time very difficult for me. And I could see the color of the paint on the walls in his apartment. I can see the television. I can feel those feelings immediately. And not every game is like that. Not every game is indelible like that. It just has a footprint in my brain forever. And Metroid Prime is one of them. And we played that game so much and loved it.
Yeah. It's also widescreen, HD, 60 frames per second, which the old version, you know, GameCube wasn't, I think, 480p, but you had to buy special cables for it. My youngest daughter had a Girl Scout meeting the other day, and normally it's like parents will chit-chat, and, you know, I'm social. I dropped her off, and the parents like, oh, what are you guys up to? And I was like, oh, actually, I'm going to sit in the car and do some work for a little bit, is what I said. And I sat in my car and played Metroid Prime. It's so good.
One of the kids rats you out. It's like, I saw your daddy playing video games. No, he said that is work.
That is work.
All right. So, Christian, this week was also Steam Next Fest. And you and I don't know about you, I played a ridiculous number of demos. There was hundreds of them, I think, as with every Steam. They used to call them something else, not Next Fest, but now they call it Next Fest. I love it. I honestly, every time I sat down on my computer, I would just cruise over to Steam, pull up the thing and see what people were streaming. Like they had tons of streams going all the time. I downloaded dozens and dozens of demos and tried them out. It's a blast. It's one of those moments in gaming where you realize how many games there are out there. I don't understand how any of these make money. You know,
this is what blew my mind, Jeff, is I did the same thing, but I also downloaded them times two because I'd be like desktop Steam Deck, desktop Steam Deck. But what blows my mind about this time playing them is that I went to my wish list and almost all of the ones from the last one, except for like one that I wish listed, aren't out yet. You know, yeah. I'm already wish listing new ones when the
it's bonkers. The whole indie game scene is so vibrant, so fun, so full of life. I love seeing all these great games. I have no idea how any of them makes money. It is crazy. When you have like a Metroid Prime remastered coming out and it sucks up all the oxygen, everybody's looking at that. I don't know. I don't know how any of these make money, but we're here to give you some of our favorites. We're going to pick and choose. Like I said, I played dozens of them. I'm not going to talk about the dozens. I'm only going to talk about the best of the very best to put them on your radar, dear listener. Christian, why don't you start with a couple of picks that you came away very impressed with?
Yeah, I'm going to highlight two that I really came away impressed with. And then I'm going to mention one other one as a call to our audience to see if I'm maybe missing something, or maybe Trixler or Jeff, one of you all can tell me if I'm missing something. But the first one is Micah and the Witch's Mountain, which is a, speaking of cozy, Trixler, it has Wind Waker vibes. It is gorgeous and beautiful, and it has like Studio Ghibli, anime Ghibli.
I think it's Ghibli, but I'm not. Ghibli. Don't quote me on
it's
that.
Funny. Sometimes you say a word out loud, and you're like, I don't know if I've ever said that word out loud before.
Christian,
I have
this
the
game,
box set.
This game also had one of the most adorable streamers that was streaming it. I don't know if you saw her streaming, but she was fully invested in, like, she would do the, anytime dialogue would come up for the game, she would read it in voices and she'd be like,
oh, that's great.
You know, it was very fun to watch her play.
This
I think she's
so
one of the developers.
Cute looking. Oh my gosh.
It's awesome. The anime style, you know, cutscenes or intro is absolutely top notch. And the game itself is this delivery platformer, you know, where the demo is very short. But then you see like the trailer for where the game goes and you're this witch, you're training to be this witch and this, you know, the head witch pushes you off the top of the mountain and is like, if, you know, come back up here if you're going to be a real witch. So you have to like upgrade your broom and do this stuff to get there. And, you know, a delivery service guy is like, well, I'll help you. You need to make money. So this delivery person is like, I'll pay you if you deliver packages. And you're like, I can deliver packages. No problem. Let's go. And you're taking packages around town and you can, there's like little mechanics where it's like you got to bring a guy's lunch out on a boat, but you can't get it wet. And your broom right now is just a little starter broom. So you have to like boost at the right time. So you're not dragging this, you know, poor fisher person's lunch is poor fisherman's lunch in the water when you bring it to them. And then they give you something that you need to scoop out of the water to give to their uncle, I think. And like all these little things. And then what really unlocked the game for me in terms of why I think it's art, you know, on my wish list is seeing what the later game can be. It kind of looks like how it builds these mechanics. And as this island opens up and there is kind of like this, you know, 3D platforming kind of happening as you're navigating the switch around the space, trying to make these deliveries. It looks awesome. It looks like a cozy, friendly, you know, family friendly game and beautiful art direction and style. It's Micah in the Witch's Mountain. Absolutely loved it. Then the other one is Nocturnal. Nocturnal is a 2D action game. And I don't quite, again, beautifully animated and really stylized and cool. And I don't quite understand exactly what's happening. And I think maybe that's the intent of the demo. But you're like this knight return or this warrior returning to this kingdom and darkness has taken it over. And you have your sword that you can light up with flame, and then you carry that flame to other torches to keep the darkness away from there. And there's combat, but it's not like a Souls like Salt and Sacrifice. It's not that style of combat. The
almost
combat
like an Ori, right?
Yeah, where like there is combat, but it's not, you're not in this like long prolonged dance with each villain. Yeah. Though I do think your upgrades progress and maybe it becomes more involved as you go on, but it's kind of puzzle exploration and figuring out how to get around this world. But the world is just so beautifully designed that while nothing was a huge challenge in my demo playtime with it, I found myself just loving being in the world and trying to understand like what happened, what is this darkness, like the way the demo was kind of doling out story moments was really fascinating. It's called Nocturnal. It's a 2D side-scrolling action light puzzle game is how I describe it. Well worth checking out.
The fire effects are exquisite. I mean, it is
yes.
really, really cool looking. You can set things on fire and you can like push fire through the level. It's really cool.
Yeah, really, really cool looking. And the game that I just – it's a vibe of a bunch of games that I'm playing right now, including Dead Space and Metroid. The System Shock – remaster or remake. Yes.
Wait, is that out?
No, just the demo.
Oh,
the
okay.
demo is out, but it's I think a fairly lengthy demo. I couldn't get into it, and I don't
really?
Know if the combat just felt off because maybe it is just a rewrap of the old combat. So this is my question to you all in the audience: like, is System Shock still good, or is it was good?
Well, System Shock makes Metroid Prime look new.
Well, I remember the sequel being more of a big deal than the first one, right? Because System Shock 2 is the kind of one that blew it out of the water. Like, everyone had to have it. So maybe...
Well, Bioshock is the spiritual successor to that as well.
To all of them. Right.
Yeah.
This remake is a beautiful coat of paint. I really like what they did of, like, There's like low res pixel style graphics on top of high res polys. So it really gives this a look of like a retro game, but modernized, but also kind of like, you know, when they redid, oh gosh, Jeff, what was the Alien movie that was the Prometheus? Mm-hmm. And like a lot of stuff in Prometheus looked too new in a way, I think. Or kind of like the Star Wars prequels. It was like, wait, Naboo had those fighters? And then what happened? Where did they go? And I feel like System Shock, this remake, avoids that. It still looks like dirty and old and really cool with how it presents things of like a modern version of an old game. But the combat, I was playing as controller, probably Sin 1, but the combat, it didn't feel... Well,
the whole point of those games is that combat's only one way to get through things, right? The whole point is options of how to handle literally any obstacle, right?
I mean, I think so, but there are definitely rooms I walked into that had zombies.
There's only one way to deal with zombies. Yeah.
But one thing I know about zombies is you shoot them in the head.
Well, I only had a pipe, so I piped them in the head. Demo, but it didn't. I was so excited to finally play it because the developer has done a great job of bringing back these dead DOS games. And this was like this big remake that they've been working on for a decade. It seemed like I've been tracking it. And it was one of those games where, kind of like Forspoken for me, where the demo made me less excited.
Isn't Warren Spector actually involved in this remake too? I think he is.
I don't know, maybe. Again, it could just be not for me, which I very much accept.
Well, I have a whole bunch of Steam Next demos that I could recommend. I will do my best of the best. I'll start with the best Steam Next Fest demo I played, which was a complete shock to me. Because I would never have guessed I would love this game so much. It's a game called Tape to Tape, which is a roguelike. And by the way, everything's a roguelike now. Everything's a roguelike. Literally, Steam Next Fest, literally, I would say 8 out of every 10 demos I downloaded was a roguelike. And I love roguelikes. So I'm
next week's podcast. Roguelike.
Roguelikes.
You got to get through it. You got to get through it. If you
don't,
listening.
Don't worry. If you don't, you can spend some currency and level up. but Tape to Tape is a roguelike hockey game.
Wait, I'm looking at this. What?
Ice hockey, like an old school, like Sega Genesis NHL 2D hockey game. Roguelike. So you're doing roguelikey stuff where you're on your little flow chart, you're going from node to node, making decisions on which branching pathway to take. You're going to go into a battle, or you're going to go to a level up place where you can spend currency and buy things. You can level up your characters, your teammates. You can give them new skills, new abilities. And then you get to combat. And what's combat? It's a game of ice hockey. It is. Play ice hockey against the bad guys. There's boss battles where the boss is a really good ice hockey team. In the demo, the boss is a team called the referees, and they're dressed like the refs. They literally have zebra shirts, and you can't tell the difference between an actual ref in the game and them. It's brilliant. 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 And it's old school. Like, I haven't played an EA NHL, like full-on sim, 3D NHL game in years. I haven't had the interest. But I do have a fondness in my heart for those old school games, those old NHL games on the Sega Genesis. This is much more that. This is like arcadey, no relation to real world flow of an ice hockey game, other than you're doing the same things. You're passing the puck, you're trying to shoot the puck, but also you're obliterating people. The scores can get wild. It's arcade style, and it is so much fun. I love the look of it, the sort of cartoonish 2D art style I am very drawn to. This game is great. I just love the idea of layering on a roguelite system onto sports games. It's what I was hoping Soccer Story was going to be, which it's not at all. But
it feels really clever to like make it into a roguelike, because those kind of games are simple. Like, you, especially the older ones, you find these like strategies and you're like, okay, then you just repeat those strategies over and over. But a roguelike breathes a lot of fresh air into a hockey match.
And
right?
You can level up your individual players and constitute your team in certain ways, and then you get these cool power ups that you can do, and you know, completely break the rules of the world. Like, I got a point where like my guys were could body check at a really high rate. So literally, like, there's just dazed bodies strewn across the ice, and I would just like skate through all these people laying on the ground going because all my other players were just knocking the crap out of the opponents.
Is there multiplayer? Can we have a Jeff versus Christian and then I'll commentate it? I'm down. This sounds great.
I don't think there's multiplayer in the demo, but maybe the final
DLC
game, I don't know. It's gotta be
DLC.
It's gotta be anyway, so Tape to Tape was the most fun I had. Complete surprise. I just downloaded it on Lark because I liked the look of it, and I was like, this is great. So I'm excited about that. Planet of Lana, which I will always pronounce that way because of our friend Lana Bashinsky. Absolutely gorgeous side scrolling. I mean, very much a Limbo or an Inside spiritual successor, except instead of sort of the dark, brooding look of a limbo or an Inside, it's bright and colorful and vibrant and lush. But it is left to right. You are a little kid who has this creature that's sort of like half cat, half rat looking alien creature. And it follows you. You can tell it, give it commands and do things, and it can interact with the environment in ways that you can't, and you can interact with the environment in ways it can't. And by sharing those different kinds of abilities, you can overcome obstacles. But the whole trick is getting to a place and also bringing your pet to the same place. So it can get there in one way, you can get there in another way. And so the puzzles are all, how do you both arrive past the obstacle at the same time? It's clever. It's beautiful. It supports super ultra wide, and it is just stunning on my monitor. Just gorgeous, kind of. I think it's faux pixel art. It's not actual pixel art. I think it's actually kind of not doing pixel art, but it looks like that. And it's just Planet of Lana. Highly, highly, highly recommend it.
I love this podcast because every time that I come to your guys' show, I get games that I can just play in the next couple of months. I have Nocturnal written down, Planet of Lana right now, and Metroid Prime. Looks great.
I'll do two more quick ones. I'll just mention Fabledom, which is a beautifully, an adorable, it's cozy. I love that. I'm going to start using that. I like that term, Trixler. It's a city sim building game, but cozy. It's gorgeous.
Cool.
Adorable Fable style, but SimCity Builder kind of deal. I highly recommend that. Card Crawl Adventure, which I'm told, my friend told me it is a sequel. I've never heard of Card Crawl before, but Card Crawl Adventure, hard to even describe. It's a roguelite card game where you lay cards in a 3x3 grid and then draw paths through those cards, and every time you hit a card, it does certain things. And so you have the way you move through the path, the way you draw a line from card to card over that grid triggers the cards in an order. And so it's about figuring out the best order through that pathway. Kind of hard to explain only audio, but very, very cool game, Card Crawl Adventure. And then the last one I want to mention is a game called Boxes, which, if any of the developers or Boxes are listening, you need to make this game in VR. Boxes is basically a puzzle game where you're trying to unlock a puzzle box. And if anybody watched Glass Onion, A Knives Out Adventure, the very beginning of that movie.
Oh, it's like that.
They get these boxes in the mail. Each of the main characters gets a box in the mail. And it's like this crazy box where, you know, you unlock one door on the side of the box and it'll give you a key to another part of the box. And that's this game. This game
that's
is
fun.
Just a giant puzzle box where you figure out one little side thing which slides open a door that has a piece in it that you can take out and slide into another part. So it's very tactile. It's all three-dimensional. It's very chunky and like pieces and moving and clockwork tech, like clicking and sliding and rotating. Oh, so pleasurable. I want it in VR because it yearns to be, you know, having your hands manipulate it and touch it and, you know, move a lever and slide a door and open a compartment and all that stuff. Really cool little puzzle game, Boxes. So that's the some of the best stuff I played at Next Fest. But man, what a great, I love that Steam does that. And there's so much clever, cool stuff going on in the indie game community. But that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up. But Tim, Trixler, Fraser, thank you so much for hanging out with us. It's always fun to have you on. We need to do it more often. Thank you.
Anytime you guys need me, I am here for you guys. I'm here to support anything that you guys do. I love being here. I love that you guys play different games. I love that you cover different stuff. Like, some people kind of go on one tunnel vision. I just love that Christian laid out lawyer stuff in front of us, and now I'm invested. And then, of course, I love your guys' excitement for games. So please, anytime you guys need me, throw me an invite. I'll be here. 100%.
Well, thank you. In the meantime, tell folks where they can check out your streams, all the stuff that you do online.
Yeah, sure. I run a variety stream 6 days a week. I also run YouTube and whatnot, just kind of trying to be everywhere on all the social media platforms, if you will. But you can follow me at Trixler, twitch.tv/Trixler. And I mean that. If anybody from this community wants to come play in our custom viewer games, they are a little bit more competitive focused. But I do want to have fun. And if you let us know what level you're at in the game, we will make sure to take care of you. Come on by. Come play some video games, and I hope Jeff and Christian come some by. I would love to do Heroes with you guys.
Oh,
that would
man.
Be sick.
I'm going to make that happen. That's going to be...
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Again, that's Trixlyr if you're looking for Trixlyr.
Yes, sir.
Christian Spicer, what do you got going on this week?
Well, I will mention again that I have additional copies of my graphic novel Consequences that was illustrated by Eduardo Mello, colors by Lauren Affey, letters by Taylor Esposito, and the logo designed by Corey Schmitz, and the cover art by World of Lana, by our friend Lana Bashinsky. It's incredible. They're available for folks right now. As long as I have stock on hand at christianspicer.com, you go over there to store and you can find them and order, and I'll sign it and get it right out to you. I'm also putting the finishing touches on my next newsletter, which you can subscribe to at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. I tried doing like a very image heavy version one, and the newsletter software I use, Tiny Letter, was like, hey, this is too many images. So I'm
it's called
it
Tiny
back.
Letter, not yeah, bustling with images letter. Come on, buddy.
It's called Tiny Letter, not Scrapbook, bro. So the content will be the same, but that's why that is a little later going out than usual. And if you are consuming Last of Us stuff, you can get a bonus episode of the official The Last of Us podcast, where Neil Druckmann and I talked before the HBO show had started. That's some fun insight. And then at the end of the season, Neil and I have another conversation where we can talk more specifically about things that happen. And then week to week, David Chen and I are doing our From a Television Only Viewer Perspective recap of each episode as they drop over at Decoding TV. And you can find that podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Again, it's Decoding TV. Yeah, I think that's about it. Jeff, what
Christian,
about you?
This week's episode of The Last of Us destroyed me. It destroyed me. That was an intense episode.
Oh, I gotta
episode.
Watch it.
Incredible.
God, it's been such a good
they
show.
Put it out a little early because of the Super Bowl, I think. So, mm-hmm.
HBO has always done with their Sunday shows. They're like, we know what's happening.
that was an intense one. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. We love hearing from you here, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Also, I have other shows, including the Film Cast, talking about movies and TV shows. You can find that online, anywhere you get podcasts, the Film Cast. We're also doing YouTube shorts and TikTokers. Tiki Talks? What do they call them? What are the kids?
I like the Tiki Talks. I think that's going to catch on. Yeah.
And so you can find it there. I do a sports show called The Fan Controlled Show. You can find that at Fan Controlled Sports and Entertainment. Fan Controlled Sports is the name of the YouTube channel. There's a Twitch channel as well, and you can find that as a podcast. And I do We Have Concerns, which is a comedy science show. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift.
Trixler, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yeah, in the past, I used to like do TV shows or like a book or something. But as I continue to get older, and I don't know if you guys relate to this, but I have felt my body and maybe even like mood swings falling off a little bit as I continue to move towards my 40s, if you will. So I recommend just going to the gym 30 minutes three times a week, or even going for a walk, get something active in your system. Because one, it feels good for your mood. I am a big believer that your physical really hits your mental as well. Just get out there and do something, and you know, encourage yourself to just get outside a little bit. That's my parting gift. Something easy, something free, something that you could do for yourself.
And it does, as you mentioned, it doesn't take a lot. It's not like you have to be there for 4 hours, you know. Just
the hardest part is saying, I'm getting up and doing it. Just push through that.
Great. I love that parting gift. Great, great one. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
I'm a big fan of that parting gift as well. I love seeing geeks and sneaks on Peloton that are riding when I am riding as well.
Yeah.
It's fun to see people from that hashtag joining in and doing that. And I agree with Trixler, but like oftentimes my kids or my wife will ask, like, oh, how was your workout? And I'll reply sincerely every single time, great, because I did it. And that's truly, you know, the hardest part is putting the sneakers on. After that, everything is gravy.
I find it, before I even put the sneakers on, the hardest part is getting out of bed.
Yeah, I was just like, this is so comfy.
Yeah, indeed. My parting gift this week is Paramore's new album, This Is Why. I love Paramore. Jeff knows how much I love Paramore. I mean, there were days there were low days where I would just have a hood on and just watch Paramore music videos. Jeff got to witness.
I relate to that so much.
Some of those days. This Is Why is great. It is a return to a little more angst for the band after their last album, After Laughter, which is a little more pop infused. And they talked about how they wanted this to be angsty, but not as if they were putting the car in reverse and, you know, go and remaking albums that they made 10, 15 years ago. And there seems like there's a lot of, you know, kind of heavier beats that that kind of go through the tracks. My favorites, oh gosh, hold on. I had it and I'm not looking at it right now. Say Come Saw, it's the fourth song on the album, is phenomenal. It's all good, but that's probably my favorite right now. And it has kind of like old school Block Party Silent Alarm vibes of like a heavier kind of beat underneath the tracks. It's fantastic. Paramore, This Is Why. And if you're in the US, a lot of their tour dates, they are going to be touring with a local band here where I live, and also another favorite of mine, the Linda Lindas.
Yeah.
So if you're looking to go to a live show, you can catch potentially both of a couple of my favorite bands playing together.
My parting gift is a show on Netflix called Kunk on Earth, C-U-N-K, Kunk on Earth. This is a mockumentary with the character Philomena Kunk, who has been around for a long, long time. There's been Kunk on Britain, Kunk on Shakespeare, Kunk on 2019. This is the latest, and I think the most high profile, because it's now on Netflix. These were British comedy shows that I don't think many people in the States had exposure to. And now it's front and center on Netflix. Kunk on Earth, I think, had a bigger budget than they've ever had before to make it. It's so funny, very dry, never winking at the audience that there's a joke, but it's just basically, I describe Philomena Kunk as what if Garth Marenghi and Dolly G had a baby. You know, she is that kind of ridiculous. It's the same thing with Dolly G, where you know, she interviews just experts. She interviews experts on a topic and does ridiculous interview, asks them ridiculous questions, and they aren't in on the joke. They don't know that they're being kind of punked. It's not really being punked. She is always the butt of the joke. It's not mean-spirited. It's always just how dumb she is, right? She is the idiot asking the idiot question and watching the experts squirm as they're like, why is this person asking me this question? It's very
so
funny.
Fun to watch. Oh,
so funny, and it's so dry. And you know, she's presenting herself as a complete expert in her field, and is of course, you know, a moron. Just brilliantly portrayed. I highly recommend Kunk on Earth. We got a listener suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes, actually, that's not true. Well, it was, but also it comes from the DLC Discord, from Ali Thist on the DLC Discord, who wrote, I recommend Summoning Salt on YouTube. He makes 30 to 60 minute documentaries on the history of speed running world records and has an incredible talent for storytelling. I've never been able to get into watching speed runs, no matter how many times I've tried to tune into Awesome Games Done Quick, but If Summoning Salt spends a half an hour discussing the world record of a single track from Mario Kart 64, I'm captivated for every minute of it. For anyone willing to give this channel a try, I suggest the video on speedrunning Super Mario Brothers called The Human Limit as an entry point.
There's so many games here. There's Pokemon, Sonic 2, Zelda, Portal, Mario Kart 4, Super Metroid. It goes on.
Yeah, I checked out the one that Ali Thist recommended, The Human Limit. It's about, I think, 45 minutes, 50 minutes maybe. I was completely captivated throughout it. It's remarkable. It's all of the most interesting stuff from my perspective about speedrunning, in that mm-hmm. it talks about how these breakthroughs happen. These people, they were hit a wall of how far you could go. And then, oh, they realized there was this glitch and how they found the glitch and then how hard it was to recreate the glitch. And it's so interesting to me that world and how much effort and energy and time people put into setting and breaking those records. So yeah, Summoning Salt, great YouTube channel as far as describing all that and making it clear and easy to digest. Really cool parting gift. Thank you, Ali Thist. If you'd like to have your parting gift on the show, send it to us. DLCfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. We appreciate it. We also appreciate you listening. This is going to do it for this episode of DLC. I want to thank our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those fun bumpers. I want to thank our theme song composers, White Cube, which is Jason Sherry, and T. Ryan Arnold. If you want to get swag for the show, any kind of t-shirt, mug, hat, we have them. We got a pretty rad logo. You can put that on your body, on your person, or on something you consume food out of by going to dlcswag.com. which is created by Jesse J. Anderson. Thank you so much for that. I also want to thank Trixler and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me and making it possible the whole way is our patrons at patreon.com/dlcpod. Thank you all for supporting us. Our top tier patrons, the Hype Train patrons, they get their names read out at the end of every episode, which I'm going to do right now.
That's right. It's time now to thank our Hype Train patrons. I'm talking patrons like Tyler Buckwild Brode, Rob Wonder Rob Dominguez, Stephen T. Seifert, Kevin Ede, Brian Yordan, Joe DeFrank, Scott Lambert, Hyperboy 66, David Epp, Shore Yukin, comedian Aaron Trahan, John Cisco, Curtis from Louisville, Relentless Rex, Michael S., Matt Valdez, Andy Joyce, Kyle Starr, Anthony Goulas, Dan Flanagan, Riley Knox, Rob Rickman, Sasan, Adam Denby, Hank Patton, Cheesy Bob, Victor Valenzuela, Scooby Diesel, Jonathan Talbert, Chris Zacharias, Matt Bradley, Jeff Luxack, Mitchell Ness, Will with 1L Harris, Jonathan Putney, Jimmy Radcliffe, Mark Gowland, Malcolm King, Dan Palmino, Ben, Jenny, Nate, Stu Goss, Kevin Brazel, Jonathan Spiceman Forever Schlepfer, Zachary White, Yick, Albert, the Stuff and Junk Show Podcast, Soren Silk, the Spiceman Silencer, Travis Jackson, Mike Lombardo, Michael Buck, Michael Stadler, Nick Strauss-Klein, Peter Olberg, Jad, Josh Peak, Christian Bravery, Octavian Ratsiu, Taylor Wiggert, and Jason Novak. Thanks to all our Hype Train patrons.
All right, that's it for this episode. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.